You know, it never fails how ever many times I get up and talk to people, I get nervous all the time. And especially for this one, because I had a lot of experience with public speaking as my previous job, but I really knew those regulations, and I come over here, and now I have to talk about regulations that, wow, these are some regulations. Okay, so first of all, though, I'll give you a little bit of background about me and who I am. I'm Stacy Splitstoser. I grew up here in Rapid City, South Dakota, and I went to the School of Mines and Technology and graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree in Geological Engineering. In 2000, actually I started in January of 2001 with the South Dakota Department of Environment and Natural Resources, and over there I was conducting inspections, writing permits, eventually became the stormwater program manager over there. And then in August of 2008, I applied for this job, and I got it. Now, you can say that would be lucky or unlucky for me, depending on the way you look at it. But some days I think I'm pretty lucky, and some days I think I'm a little unlucky, but it's getting better. And then in 2006, I did sit for the professional engineering exam and got my PE in 2006 in environmental engineering. Okay, so today I'm going to be talking about the South Dakota codified laws for pipeline safety. We actually do have some laws here in South Dakota that are a little bit different from the federal regulations, and I thought I'd go over those today. Next slide. Okay. The first thing that I wanted to talk about is there's a couple of different terms here, and I know that when I first started working in state government, I was a little confused about them. One is, what's a South Dakota codified law, and what is an administrative rule of South Dakota? What's the difference? Well, the difference is a codified law is one that can be developed, is only developed by our state legislators. So the members of our state House and Senate can develop those, or they're the only people who can develop those. And it's a law that people have to follow. So what's an administrative rule of South Dakota? Well, it's basically a law. However, it's developed by entities such as state agencies, such as the Public Utilities Commission, which explains and clarifies what's required in the codified law. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of background, because I know I was confused about that when I first started. And then here is our website that you can find all of our PUC-related statutes, and our pipeline safety laws can be found at this website also. So if you want to look them up, because I know you love to read regulations, you can go to that website. Next one. Okay, you got to forgive me here. I'm still not as familiar with these regulations, so I got my notes here. I just want to make sure I'm not missing any important points. Okay. So, let's get started here. The Chapter 49, actually it's called Title 49, Chapter 34B, pertains to our pipeline safety laws here in South Dakota. Right now, we do not have any administrative rules in place for pipeline safety, but we are proposing some, and some of you have probably gotten that notification from us that we're proposing some administrative rules. Kara is going to be talking about those after me, so she'll be giving you a good explanation of them after we're done here. Next one. Okay. I know you're all excited. We're going to dive right into the regulations. Next one. Okay. So what I thought I would do here, though, is I thought I'd give you the exact number, and I'm going to go through most of those laws that we have. And then I gave you in yellow text, I gave you the exact title of what that regulation is. I didn't give you the entire text of the regulation. What I tried to do was in white text, give you a plain language explanation of what's in that law. Because I don't know about you guys, but regulations can be a little bit murky and hard to understand. So what I tried to do was just put it in plain language terms so you could understand what we're required to do. Okay, so for the first one, 4934B1, that's just our definition section. And so some of the terms that we use in our laws are defined in this section. And some of the more important terms are emergency release. intrastate versus interstate. I think Wayne kind of talked about that a little bit, what the difference is between those two. A release, a very important definition there. But note there that there are several other definitions that we have in that section, not just those terms that I have on that slide. Next slide. Okay, next one, number two in the rules. Rural gathering facility exempt. Pretty easy to understand that one. If you are a rural gathering facility as defined in the Code of Federal Regulations, you're exempt from South Dakota's laws.
Next one.
Okay, number three. This one is pretty important for our program here in South Dakota. The Pipeline Safety Inspection Program was created with this law. And so what that did was that allowed us as South Dakota inspectors to go in and inspect our intrastate operators and enforce our pipeline safety laws. This one also adopted the Code of Federal Regulations Parts 191, 192, 193, and 199. And most of you are probably pretty familiar with the 192 because that's the real meat of the gas pipeline safety regulations. This one's pretty important, too, because it says that we, South Dakota, must comply with the federal requirements also in order to continue our control of that intrastate program. Right now, South Dakota only has the control of the intrastate gas operators within South Dakota.
Next one.
Number four, the promulgation of safety standards. What this just allows us to do is it allows us to establish safety standards on our intrastate operators. Keep in mind, though, it also says that we cannot be more stringent than the federal rules. But those safety standards, what they can apply to on you gas operators is to this design, installation, inspection, testing, construction, extension, operation, replacement, and maintenance on your pipeline facility. But before we can create those, we do have to take into consideration any relevant and available data, appropriateness, reasonableness, you know, try and use common sense, and the extent that they will contribute to public safety along with the existing federal standards. That's what we have to take into consideration. Next. Okay, non-compliance. What happens if a facility is in non-compliance? What can we do? Well, this law just says that you must, as an intrastate gas operator, comply with these regulations. If the PUC or we inspectors find some noncompliance, what happens then? Well, the PUC, the commission, what they can do is they can order, what we can do is restrict or suspend the use of that facility. We can require additional inspection or testing, or repair or replacement, or even other actions as we find appropriate. However, we can't do that without giving you notice and an opportunity for a hearing before the commission. Except, I did put this little note in here, if we felt that there was an imminent danger to public safety or the environment, we could do that without that notice or hearing. So, you know, if we felt there was a situation out there that was imminently dangerous, we could do that without giving the notice or the opportunity for a hearing.
Next.
Okay, plan for inspection and maintenance of facility. So we may require, well, and you actually are required by the federal regulations, you don't have to submit those plans to us, but you do have to develop them for inspection and maintenance of your system and any changes to the plan. So if we requested that information from you, you would need to submit that to us. If we reviewed it and felt it was inadequate, we could require you to make changes to that plan. Again, this would be after a notice and an opportunity for a hearing before the commissioners. And again, we've got to consider relevant safety data, the appropriateness, reasonableness, et cetera, that we did before. We do have to take those into consideration before we would require the changes. I really like this one. This is like me going out in the field doing my little inspection. I even have a mirror. I don't have a magnifying lens, but okay, required records and information. This just says the intrastate operators, you're required to create, maintain, and provide the information to us, the VUC. That information must also be provided to other employees or agents that we designate as PUC employees. We have to have credentials to enter. You know, if we came onto the site and you had a newer employee and they didn't know who I was, you could ask us to present our credentials. And we have our little ID cards, and we have to show them if you're in question of who we are. But we may enter and inspect gas pipeline facilities at any time. We do not have to give you advance notice. Most of the time we do. We do realize that, especially for these standard inspections, it does take a lot of work for you to get those records pulled together and get them out there for us to inspect. So usually we give you advance notice, but we don't always have to. So, and we can inspect that at reasonable times and in reasonable manners. So I couldn't come in there and with guns blazing and all that. We do have to use a reasonable manner. Now, define reasonable manner. I don't know, but use your common sense. Like, again, I'm not going to come in there with guns blazing, but I am going to come in there and just try and explain to you what I need, you know, in a nice manner. You can get more with sugar than you can with vinegar. Next one. Okay, this one, pretty simple. It's programs for prevention of damage. The PUC is required to encourage and promote the damage prevention for the programs for your pipeline facilities with for excavation and for construction activities. We do recognize that that is some of the most damaging things that can happen to a pipeline is from third-party damage from construction. So we have to encourage and promote those programs within South Dakota. Next one. Okay, this one's an important one. At least I think it's important for you as companies. This is the inspection fee for the interstate operators. We do assess and collect an inspection fee on an annual basis. You can dispute that fee. So if we sent you a bill for how much we felt that you owed and you did not feel that that was right, you could dispute it. What you would have to do is submit something to us in writing, though, within 30 days of receiving that bill. And then within 30 days of us receiving your written complaint, we would have to have a commission hearing about that to then determine what the appropriateness of what an appropriate fee would be. What are those fees used for? Well, we use them to conduct inspections. We use them for the operator assistance visits, and we use it for incident investigations. We've used it for this conference, you know, a lot of different things. But it's basically to implement the pipeline safety program here in South Dakota. Next. How do we know how much to charge you? You know, we can't just say, hey, give us this much. That's how much we want. Now, we actually have a rule, a law that says that here's how much we can charge you. What we do is we charge each company annually for the expenses that are directly attributable to your company. What does that mean? Well, basically, we charge you for the cost of doing the inspections or even some of the operator assistance visits. So, for instance, when I come out and do an inspection, if I have to be there for a week, then you would be paying how much it would cost for me for my wages, for mileage that was used, maybe the motel room that we had to stay in while we were there, that kind of stuff. It's directly attributable to your company because we were doing your inspection. Excuse me. Now, companies will be charged a pro rata share for expenses that are not directly attributable. Well, what does that mean? Well, that, for example, when I first started in this program, I had to go and buy quite a bit of safety equipment. I needed steel-toe boots, a hard hat, safety glasses, reflective vest, hearing protection, things like that. And that's not direct. You know, I can't say, well, I can charge that to just one company. So we split that cost between all of our companies that we inspect. And how do we split that up? Well, for our distribution companies, it's based on the number of meters that are in service for that year. And then for transmission and LPG facilities, it's the percent of total miles that you're operating in South Dakota. So we split that up based on that number. This one, we had to have this. It's the initial inspection fee that we had to charge just to get the program up and running. So July 1st of 1994, I'm assuming that's when we got the program from turned over from the federal government. And that's when we charged the first fees. We also said that those fees had to be credited to the pipeline safety account. Okay, this one is probably pretty important to you guys. It talks about civil penalties. So if we find noncompliance, what happens? You know, what can we do? Well, if we find a violation, the PUC may impose civil penalties, but we have to give you notice and we have to give you an opportunity for a hearing in front of the commissioners. Those civil penalties, they can't exceed $10,000 per day per violation. For each violation. But notice here, it can't exceed $500,000 for any related series of violations. Well, what does that mean? Say you had one inspection and we found 20 different violations. We could fine you $10,000 for each day that you were in violation. But we would not be able to exceed $500,000 for that. So, usually we don't go up to the highest amount first off the bat. We usually don't say, hey, we're going to fine you $10,000. We can go up to that amount, but we take into account the appropriateness of the penalty to the size of the business. You know, maybe a bigger business making more money might get a little higher fine than some master meter operator. We also take into account the seriousness of the violation. Not all violations are created equal. I truly believe we try and use common sense when we look at this kind of stuff. We look at prior offenses and compliance history. You know, if you've been a bad actor for a long time, then we do take that into account. But we also take into account the good faith of the company in attempting to correct those violations. So if we know that you have honestly been working to get back into compliance, we take that into account also. What happens to that money if we do find somebody? Well, it doesn't go into my pocket or Nathan's pocket. We have to deposit that back into the pipeline safety account. Okay, conduct in violation of a federal act. This one was a little difficult for me to understand, I think. But the way it was explained was, okay, the PUC cannot subject our operators to civil penalties under this chapter if prior civil penalties were imposed under the federal regulations. So we incorporated the federal regulations. So if you violated one of those, we couldn't fine you twice to be in violation of the federal regulation and then also the state statute.
Is that like double jeopardy or something?
Exactly, exactly. In a sense, it does prevent the double jeopardy.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I never read that.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Sorry.
What did you suggest the final jeopardy?
Yeah. You know, how do you follow Wayne St. Germain's presentation, I have to say? You know, how do you follow somebody like that? Wayne, you're making me look bad.
There we go.
Next one. Okay. If you'll notice, it went from 13 to 19 in the rules. There are some rules that we have that say that if we were delegated as an interstate, not intrastate, but interstate, if the feds designated us to be an agent for them, we could inspect the interstate. So there's a series of laws about that, but we are not delegated as an agent, nor I don't think we can even become one at this point in time. So I'm not going to go over those at this point. But 19 here is the promulgation of inspection and safety rules. So basically that just says the PUC can create pipeline inspection and safety rules to the extent necessary to qualify for our federal certification. So if we need to, we can develop additional pipeline safety rules. We can also develop rules for the calculation and assessment and collection of the fees. We have the codified laws, but if we feel that they're not quite enough and we need to get into more detail, we could propose some rules for that. Next one. All right, accident reports. If we would have to come out and do an inspection, an incident investigation, something like that, those pipeline safety accident reports that are made by us can be used in civil, criminal, or any other judicial proceedings. And two, we may also be called as witnesses in those proceedings if they came to be. Reports that we make within our office, if they are made available to the public, we do not have to identify individuals. We don't have to name names within our reports. I think that can be pretty important down the line if you do actually get into an incident where if you have an unfortunate one where somebody dies or something like that. But this law does say that we don't have to name names within our reports. If we make a report on a research project, a demonstration project, or any other related activity, that report has to be public information. There is the one thing I've kind of struggled with going from DENR over to the PUC is over at DENR, everything of ours was public information. And at the PUC, I'm finding that is not quite the case. There are certain documents that are not allowed to be allowed to be viewed by the public. Next slide. Such as trade secrets. So this law does say that if you... if we need to obtain information and you feel that it's a trade secret or needs to be held confidential, you can let us know that, and we will keep it confidential. It won't be made available to the public. It will be disclosed to other PUC employees. And keep in mind, too, though, that information, we're not allowed to withhold that information from any legislative committee member. This one just says that we're allowed to accept federal money for our program. We do get quite a bit of money from the feds, and this says that we can do that, but it has to go into our pipeline safety account. And this is kind of a duh, go figure. We can't break any law to obtain that money. So, next one. Waiver. This one can be pretty important. I know a couple facilities have applied for waivers. So if you feel like, there's a regulation that, for our facility, this just doesn't make sense, and you strongly feel that way, you can apply for a waiver. I know we have granted some waivers. We can grant those to those regulations, but we have to give notice and an opportunity for a hearing. We basically have to allow the public to give their 2 cents if they want to, and to give you your 2 cents to let us know why you want that waiver. Keep in mind, though, it can't make your pipeline unsafe. It has to be consistent with the pipeline safety rules. Damaging or tampering the sign. This is basically if you've got some problems with people destroying or tampering with your signs. I know that there's a lot of people that have problems with hunters or people out there shooting at your signs, things like that. Well, if you ever catch anybody, this law just says that you can't destroy, remove, or tamper pipeline markers. And if you do catch somebody and they're found guilty, they can be guilty of a Class 2 misdemeanor under this state law. Next one. Prohibition against disposing of, destroying, or altering pipeline involved in emergency release. I think this is very important for you guys as operators. No operator can dispose of, destroy, or alter a part of the pipeline that was involved in an emergency release. This can include moving it. So keep that in mind, that if you need to move it, please call us for our approval first. But we also know that you need to take care of that gas leak. We also know that you need to stop whatever's happening at the time. And we do take that into consideration also. So this doesn't prevent you from taking actions to try to mitigate the further release of gas. We want you to go ahead and do that. But after everything's cooled down, the fire's out, whatever, stand down. Please don't move anything unless you get our approval. Because we do have to come in and do an incident investigation. And if things have been moved, it just makes it a little more difficult for us to take the pictures and to write our reports. Yep.
It's my understanding that law says we must get approval, not staff's approval, PUC approval. PUC approval can only be gotten through a document. So before we can, remove something on a site, we're going to have to appear before the commission?
Well, I think our rules are actually going to be, that's why we propose these rules, because we've come up against this in another situation. And that's why are you familiar with our proposed rules?
Yes, I'm familiar with them.
Yeah, and we put that in there. We wanted to clarify that because you're right. I mean, we felt that we wouldn't have time. I mean, that is a big, pardon my French, pain in the ass to have to go do a docket, open up a docket, and go through that whole process just in order to move something. So that is exactly, but that's the way the law is written. So, you can't excavate and remove the pipeline from the ground as long as it's not intentionally altered, because we need to, or you need to determine the cause of that incident. Root cause is very important. And so you can excavate it and remove it. Just try not to damage it, and definitely don't intentionally damage it. People that are found intentionally damaging it or intentionally violating this law, if they're found guilty, they can be guilty of a Class 5 felony. And this is the last one within the chapter here, and the powers of commission and enforcement of the chapter. Basically, this just says that in order for us to carry out our responsibilities, the PUC needs to conduct investigations, make reports, issue subpoenas, conduct hearings, require production of relevant records, take depositions, conduct research. You know, we're allowed to do that in order to do our jobs and in order to have this pipeline safety program. Next. Okay, so I'm almost done. You guys are almost done. It's almost beer drinking time. All right, so basically South Dakota has been designated the intrastate gas pipeline program within South Dakota. The laws that pertain to you are found at Chapter 4934B, and then we are proposing some administrative rules. They are not final. Those administrative rules are not final. Kara's going to be talking about those. And so if you want to say in that process, or if you want to say in the development of the rules, please, please ask her some questions, figure out how to do that. This is your time to get involved. Next one. Does anybody else have any more questions?
Stacy, does that say an emergency release, or did that say an incident?
Go back. Let's go back.
It says an emergency release. So if I have a half-inch gas line, I can't cover that up? I mean, that's an emergency release. I have a half-inch cut gas line.
Well, a release is defined.
Well, and it does say that this section does not prevent an operator from taking appropriate action to limit or prevent the further release of gas. Hmm. So wouldn't that...
Right, but how do I know in which situations I'm supposed to call you then so that you can come see it? I guess I always thought this was talking about a federal incident, and it was talking about a situation where we were removing pipe from the ground.
An emergency release is defined as a release of a quantity of gas great enough to pose a clear and immediate danger to life, health, environment, or threatens a significant loss of property. So I think that's probably a judgment call on your part.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to meet the federal definitions if you look at our definition in there.
And if you want to clear that up, I mean, maybe that's something legislatively that should be done, Melissa.
Yeah, I think it was probably good for us to go through some of these. I'm not sure that you're all aware that we do have this extra set of laws besides the federal regulations. Yeah, we incorporated those, but we do have a few things that, you know, maybe they don't match up. You know, maybe, you know, I think it's just good to be aware that there's other laws out there within South Dakota that you need to follow also.
Stacy, Melissa had a good point there, and maybe that needs to be clarified, but every time a contractor hits a line, it's an emergency release of gas. It meets the definition of that emergency release.
It could very well, yes. So I know. This is one of the things that we came up with, one of the reasons why we've developed some administrative rules is because we want to clarify this and make it easier for you, and also to, you know, you have your say in it. So, yeah, I mean, you're right.
But you're saying that we're guilty of a Class 5 felony.
Only if you...
Technically, we could, every time we fix a line, we could be guilty of a felony.
But it also says, as long as the pipeline is not intentionally altered, that prevents determination of cause. So if I know Billy Bob Keating and Cooley hit my line, I don't need to wait for you because I know they hit it. So I determine cause, or I know that the roof fell on the meter. I know cause. Do I have to wait for you before I move that meter?
Well, I think the key thing here is to contact us and to let us know what's going on. And then another key thing is to come in on these administrative rules and get them changed to what you think. You know, you have a voice in this. You do have a say in this.
I think one clarification, too, though, Stacey, is that our administrative rules can't change within the statute. So clearly, if we need to make a statute change, if you think there's some inconsistency, I would talk to your legal counsel, and maybe something legislatively should be done next session. And that definition of an emergency release maybe should be changed.
Well, and I guess the only reason why I'm thinking at this is this is a rule I came to know during the Mitchell incident. And in an incident elevated to that high, I don't have a problem with it. But now if we're going to start applying this rule to every little scenario, wow. I mean, because I've worked, you know, in DOT for 5 years and I've applied it once. So no big deal. I'll deal with it that one time I've applied it and we'll go through the hoops. But how often now are you going to start applying that? Because how often you apply it affects how I feel about this rule.
And this is a statute. So yep. We should make that, again, it's a legislative process, not something the PUC can change without legislation.
But I guess what I'm saying is Martin never invoked it. So, I mean, he used it once, or we used it once with the Mitchell incident that was an incident related to that high of a magnitude.
And I think you hit it when you cited the last sentence or so where it said that so long as evidence isn't destroyed to destroy a showing of cause, you've documented to the point that cause will not be destroyed by doing what you need to do to go about business. Should inspectors or should the PUC question it, they're going to want to just see that determination of cause is going to preserve. That's how I would interpret it. Purely an interpretation. The PUC doesn't have an order on this statute, so I can't say judicially how it would be determined. Does that make sense?
Unless anybody else has any questions.
Oh, yeah.
South Dakota codified law, do they automatically adopt any updates in 192 then? Is that updated, or does that have to be brought up to the legislature every year?
It does have to be brought up to the legislature, and every other year we incorporate all of the changes.
So then it's actually not South Dakota law until the year, it's not enforceable until the year that it's approved by the legislature.
Well, as our role with the federal government, I would argue that still federally that rule would apply, the federal reg, but it wouldn't be a violation of South Dakota statute at that point, necessarily. Does that make sense?
But they're not forcing the federal side. They're not an agent of the federal.
Sure, yeah. Again, I would argue that it could appear in an inspection report, but couldn't be enforced through a PUC process.
What years do they?
We did it this year, correct?
Yep.
So every even year?
What month and year is it in?
July 1.
Of the previous year?
Of the year after legislators approve it. Okay. So this July 1, all of this past session's laws will take effect.
But would that include everything from the July 1? You know what I'm saying? Like, this is February 2009. July 2009 will probably be another quarter inch thick.
Versus this.
Yeah, let me look at what the statute does here.